Chapter 5. The after hatch, as if my legs had been jerked from under me. I felt suddenly very tired and languid. The shipkeeper, whom I could hardly make out, hung over the capstan in a fit of weak, pitiful coughing. He gasped out very low, "Oh, dear. Oh, dear." Apostrophe and struggled for breath so long that I got up alarmed and irresolute. "I've been took like this since last Christmas, 12 months. It ain't nothing." He seemed 100 years old at least. I never saw him properly, because he was gone ashore, and out of sight, when I came on deck in the morning, but he gave me the notion of the feeblest creature that ever breathed. His voice was thin like the buzzing of a mosquito. As it would have been cruel to demand assistance from such a shadowy wreck, I went to work myself, dragging my chest along a pitch-black passage under the poop deck, while he sighed and moaned around me, as if my exertions were more than his weakness could stand. At last, as I banged pretty heavily against the bulkheads, he warned me in his faint, breathless wheeze to be more careful. "What's the matter?" I asked rather roughly, not relishing to be admonished by this forlorn, broken-down ghost. "Nothing. Nothing, sir," he protested so hastily that he lost his poor breath again, and I felt sorry for him. "Nly, the captain and his missus are sleeping on board. She's a lady that mustn't be disturbed. They came about 8:30, and we had a permit to have lights in the cabin till 10 tonight." This struck me as a considerable piece of news. I had never been in a ship where the captain had his wife with him. I'd heard fellows say that captains' wives could work a lot of mischief on board ship if they happened to take a dislike to anyone, especially the new wives, if young and pretty. The old and experienced wives, on the other hand, fancied they knew more about the ship than the skipper himself, and had an eye like a hawk's for what went on. They were like an extra chief mate of a particularly sharp and unfeeling sort who made his report in the evening. The best of them were a nuisance. In the general opinion, a skipper with his wife on board was more difficult to please, but whether to show off his authority before an admiring female, or from loving anxiety for her safety, or simply from irritation at her presence, nobody I ever heard on the subject could tell for certain. After I had bundled in my things, somehow I struck a match and had a dazzling glimpse of my berth. Then I pitched the roll of my bedding into the bunk, but took no trouble to spread it out. I wasn't sleepy now, neither was I tired. And the thought that I was done with the earth for many, many months to come made me feel very quiet and self-contained, as it were. Sailors will understand what I mean. Marlowe nodded. "Tea is a strictly professional feeling," he commented. "Other professions or trades know nothing of it. It is only this calling whose primary appeal lies in the suggestion of restless adventure which holds out that deep sensation to those who embrace it. It is difficult to define, I admit." "I should call it the peace of the sea," said Mr. Charles Powell in an earnest tone, but looking at us, as though he expected to be met by a laugh of derision, and were half prepared to salve his reputation for common sense by joining in it. But neither of us laughed at Mr. Charles Powell, in whose start in life we had been called to take a part. He was lucky in his audience. "A very good name," said Marlowe, looking at him approvingly. "Sailor finds a deep feeling of security in the exercise of his calling. The exacting life of the sea has this advantage over the life of the earth, that its claims are simple and cannot be evaded." "Gospel truth," assented Mr. Powell. "Oh, they cannot be evaded." That an excellent understanding should have established itself between my old friend and our new acquaintance was remarkable enough, for they were exactly dissimilar, one individuality projecting itself in length and the other in breadth, which is already a sufficient ground for irreconcilable difference. Marlowe, who was lanky, loose, quietly composed in varied shades of brown robbed of every vestige of gloss, had a narrow, veiled glance, the neutral bearing, and the secret irritability which go together with a predisposition to congestion of the liver. The other, compact, broad and sturdy of limb, seemed extremely full of sound organs functioning vigorously all the time in order to keep up the brilliance of his coloring, the light curl of his coal black hair, and the luster of his eyes, which asserted themselves roundly in an open, manly face. Between two such organisms one would not have expected to find the slightest temperamental accord. But I have observed that profane men living in ships like the holy men gathered together in monasteries develop traits of profound resemblance. This must be because the service of the sea, and the service of a temple, are both detached from the vanities and errors of a world which follows no severe rule. The men of the sea understand each other very well in their view of earthly things, for simplicity is a good counselor and isolation not a bad educator. A turn of mind composed of innocence and skepticism is common to them all, with the addition of an unexpected insight into motives, as of disinterested lookers-on at a game. Mr. Powell took me aside to say, "I like the things," he says. "You understand each other pretty well," I observed. "I know his sort," said Powell, going to the window, to look at his cutter still riding to the flood. "He's the sort that's always chasing some notion or other round and round his head just for the fun of the thing." "Keeps them in good condition," I said. "Lively enough, I dare say," he admitted. "Would you like better a man who let his notions lie curled up?" "That I wouldn't," answered our new acquaintance. Clearly he was not difficult to get on with. "Like him, very well," he continued, "though it isn't easy to make him out. He seems to be up to a thing or two. What's he doing?" I informed him that our friend Marlowe had retired from the sea in a sort of half-hearted fashion some years ago. Mr. Powell's comment was, "Fancied had enough of it?" "Fancied's the very word to use in this connection," I observed, remembering the subtly provisional character of Marlowe's long sojourn amongst us. From year to year he dwelt on land as a bird rests on the branch of a tree, so tense with the power of brusque flight into its true element, that it is incomprehensible why it should sit still minute after minute. The sea is the sailor's true element, and Marlowe, lingering on shore, was to me an object of incredulous commiseration like a bird, which, secretly, should have lost its faith in the high virtue of flying. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.